you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's an honor and a privilege to be here with you this morning, and thank you very much for spending your morning with me. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, 2009. Again, welcome to 2A Radio. By the way, the website 2aradio.com exists. There's just nothing on it now. I hope to have it rectified within the next few days, including having archives of the show available for download in MP3 format. If you want to call in today, 800-313-9443 to share your views and get into a little dialogue with me. Additionally, if you would like to spread the good word about Republic Broadcasting, you can order those 100 business cards that are just generic informational business cards you can hand out to folks. It is $8 for 100. That includes shipping, and you get a free bumper sticker. To order those, you can call during 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, 800-724-2719. Again, 800-724-2719. Okay, the D.C. Attorney General decries about this gun amendment. Now, if you'll remember, we reported a couple of weeks ago during the early inception of this show that Senator John Ensign of Nevada, in fact, put together a proposal that passed the Senate with quite a big majority to repeal the D.C. gun ban. Of course, it stalled in the House thanks in large part to Nancy Pelosi, who wants to tack that on as a rider onto something else that doesn't have much of a hope of passing. The nation's capital would be more vulnerable to a terrorist attack if the District of Columbia's gun laws were weakened, the city's attorney general said this past Friday. Peter Nichols testified before a House subcommittee examining the potential effect of a gun amendment attached to legislation that would give D.C. its first full vote in Congress against something that actually violates the Constitution. The measure sponsored by Senator John Ensign, Republican of Nevada, would repeal the city's strict gun registration requirements and registrations on semi-automatic weapons. Here's what this knucklehead of D.C. said. He says, "The terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001 demonstrated something that we have known for some time. Government facilities, dignitaries, and public servants are prime targets for terrorists. As a result, it would seem to me the district is the last place where residents across the country would want to allow assault weapons." Now imagine that. This guy's giving an opinion that because Washington, D.C. is such a huge potential target for terrorist attacks, that the citizens shouldn't be allowed to defend themselves. Nichols testifies on behalf of D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lehner, who was unable to attend Friday's hearing because of a family emergency. Lehner testified that she had grave concerns when a similar bill was considered by Congress last year. Friday's hearing, led by Eleanor Holmes Norton, the city's non-voting member of Congress, comes to Democratic leaders about the plot to move voting rights forward into the House from the bill that passed the Senate, as we said earlier. So imagine that. These folks do not... they're actually lobbying Congress to not pass this. They really, honest to God, believe that if there's more guns in the hands of civilians, law-abiding civilians, that have to pass background checks and go through the hoopla, that Washington, D.C. is somehow more dangerous and less safe. Can you imagine? Unreal. Stay tuned. Listen to these messages coming up. We'll be back after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Continuing on with this story out of D.C., Assistant U.S. Capitol Police Chief Daniel Nichols told lawmakers Friday he could not comment specifically on pending legislation, but he said allowing residents to carry guns outside their homes would, quote, complicate law enforcement efforts. As of right now, police are trained to view anyone carrying a weapon as a threat, he said. Ensign's amendment would allow residents to carry guns to and from a place of business. Can you imagine? Law enforcement is trained to view anybody with a gun as a threat. Now, I am former law enforcement. I got to tell you, if I see somebody carrying a gun, I'm going to look at them as though I need to decide whether or not they're a threat, but I'm not going to treat them as a threat, which what that means is they see somebody with a gun or they believe has a gun, maybe concealed. What are they going to do? They're going to draw down on them and go to town. Not good. Not good when your government fears your guns. The amendment, this is in an email statement from Senator John Ensign. My amendment is consistent with the rulings by the United States Supreme Court saying that the measures put in place by the district went too far and infringed on people's Second Amendment rights. Now, continuing, the amendment comes after the Supreme Court affirmed this past June that the Second Amendment right to bear arms applies to private citizens and ruled that D.C.'s 32-year-old gun ban was unconstitutional. Since then, D.C. officials have responded by rewriting their gun laws to complicate everything. They've rewritten it in an effort to comply with the ruling, but in fact, the National Rifle Association and other lawmakers, including Ensign, say that the city continues to violate the Constitution by imposing numerous restrictions over and above what they used to have on gun ownership. So they've repealed the oldest restrictions and applied new ones. Is there provision to own a handgun? Yes. But within the next 2 years, it won't be allowed simply because they want to have this micro-stamping thing, which no gun manufacturer is going to deal with. But Nichols argued the amendment would make Washington's gun regulation amongst the most lax in the nation, making it much harder for law enforcement to protect dignitaries who frequently travel by motorcade through the city. Again, the guy is afraid of citizens with guns. He also criticized a provision that would allow D.C. residents to buy handguns in Maryland and Virginia without going through a federally licensed dealer in D.C., something that is not allowed anywhere else in the country. That is because the city doesn't allow gun dealers often. They don't allow them to exist often. And the few that they do have, they highly restrict on what they can get. Representative Donna Edwards, a Democrat out of Maryland, very liberal, said the cost of extra background checks would place, quote, a tremendous burden on the state at a time when its budget is already strained. What a crock of bull. You have to pay for the background check. It's not going to place any tremendous burden, whether it's financial or otherwise. How many D.C. residents are going to go out and buy guns? Probably several thousand. And they have three places to choose from to go to. Now, when it comes to these folks who are just afraid of the citizens having guns, I have a little sound file I'd like to play for you. Listen to this.
Here is the dirty little secret of the Second Amendment that you probably never learned in public schools. The Second Amendment was written to give you the right to shoot at the government when it becomes a tyranny.
Now, from what I understand, that soundbite comes from someone speaking to Napolitano, who happens to be the head of, Homeland Security, I believe is what they call in that group now. Now, I have to ask you, how can a city that bans handguns lead the nation in murders? All right, you cannot legally buy a handgun in Chicago, which also happens to be the nation's most murderous city. Now, what city is it that competes with Chicago for the murder capital of the United States? What cities? There's two of them. Anybody know? Huh? Raise your hand if you know. Let me see. All right. You in the back. What is it? Right. Washington, D.C. and New York City. Washington, D.C., New York City, and Chicago have the highest murder rates per capita of any metropolis out there. Now, which three major metropolis have the strictest gun control laws? By show of hands, who knows? Who knows? Huh? You in the corner. What is it? That's right. Chicago, Washington, D.C., and New York City. So, this is the way it's been for years. Chicago, New York City, Washington, D.C., incredibly restricted gun laws. As a matter of fact, in a lot of cases, simply just denied your rights. And the murder rates are up. Why? Because the criminals don't have to worry about their victims having guns. How about that? We have been legislated in these cities into being victims. We've been legislated to the point where criminals can do with us as they so please and get away with it because the prosecution levels and the incarceration levels there suck. They're not up to par. Now, in Chicago, you can own a gun, but only if you've owned it since before 1982 and you register it every year with the Chicago Police Department. Failure to do so constitutes a crime. The gun control advocates and gun rights advocates don't or can't seem to agree on how a city with a handgun ban could lead the nation in murders. To proponents of owning guns, it means the ban doesn't work. Here's a guy named John Riggio, owner of Chuck's Gun Shop and Pistol Range in Riverdale, just outside of Chicago. Laws are only for law-abiding citizens anyway. Criminals, by definition, don't follow the law. That's brilliant. It's absolutely true. Criminals don't follow the law. Otherwise, they wouldn't be classified as what? As criminals. They would be normal, everyday citizens abiding by the law. Only locks on your house only keep out honest people. You understand that? If somebody is hell-bent to get into your house, lock or no lock, alarm or no alarm, they're going to go in. You're not going to stop them. You can try to dissuade them with big locks, great doors, good security systems, strong windows. You can try to deter them, which works in most cases. But if somebody's hell-bent, they're getting in. Imagine if the ATF thought that you were practicing a religion which was other than something that they recognized, Waco, and they wanted in. What would they do? Well, your doors, your locks, your windows are not going to stop them. But what does? Armed people. Armed people does. And I don't know why Janet Reno has not been tossed in prison for that whole just quagmire in Waco. I don't understand it. Yeah, was David Koresh a little goofy? Yeah, he was goofy. Was he preaching some weird stuff as we found out later? Yeah, he's preaching some weird stuff. Was he actually violating any laws? No. Would I have joined? No. I wouldn't have gone close to the place. But does that mean that the guy shouldn't have been doing what he was doing? The answer is no. Why Janet Reno is not serving a prison sentence for that, I have no idea. I really don't. I actually know a guy who was an Army major. And he ended up resigning his commission over that because he was on site and was given an illegal order. And he refused. He said, I swore to uphold the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic. And as it turns out, you are the domestic enemy to these people. And that's a violation of the Constitution. It's an illegal order. I will not follow it. He eventually resigned his commission over that. Imagine that, a stand-up guy. All right, continuing about this whole murder rate in Chicago. Gun control opponents look at Chicago and say they have a handgun ban and look at their murders. But I think, frankly, that's ignorant, said Thomas Menard, executive director of the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. What did this guy just say in that statement? Nothing. He says gun control opponents like to look at Chicago and say they have a handgun ban, look at all the murders. But I think, frankly, that's ignorant. That's all he says. Then he continues with, they're not taking into account that you can get handguns just outside of Chicago. So, what an ignorant, jackass statement. This Thomas Menard of the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. Can you believe this? All he does is spout rhetoric. He doesn't actually address the real-life concerns here. He doesn't. Indiana Avenue cuts a straight line south from Calmet Water Reclamation Plant into Riverdale, past a row of boarded up and abandoned buildings just outside of Chicago. At 143rd Street, On the right sits Chuck's Gun Shop, one of the closest places to legally buy a handgun outside Chicago's city limits. A trip to Chuck's on a recent weekday, according to this reporter, nearly 30 patrons walked through the door in the space of an hour. That's one every 2 minutes to buy a gun. They were there for guns. Trade in, apply for, shop, rent. It's all available at Chuck's, right? Go in there, rent a gun, go out on the range and shoot. Employees wear handguns in hip holsters, and before they'll let customers see or touch anything, they'll ask to see their firearms owner's identification card. How about that? In Illinois, and well, Cook County, I believe it is. It might be all the state of Illinois. I forget. I've read it before, but I forget. You actually have to have a firearm owner's identification card. You have to register yourself as an able firearms purchaser, that you don't have a criminal background check and can pass a Brady check, an instant Brady check, isn't enough. You got to go through their hoopla, their forms, pay their fee to get a card. How about that? You got to register as a human being to exercise your rights. Can you believe this audacity? Drives me nuts. I just don't get it. It's a right. And the only reason that anybody in any government agency doesn't want us to have that right is because they're afraid that we may someday exercise that right when they become tyrannical. That's all it is, folks. It's not about guns. It's about control. We'll be back in a minute.
Here's Dr.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, continuing on with this information out of the Chicago area. Once approved for a firearm owner's identification card, or FOID as they refer to it, there's a 72-hour waiting period from the time you buy a handgun until you can pick it up. All right? Additionally, you can buy as many guns as you want at once, but you can only take possession of one every 31 days, a law of Riverside, Illinois. So you could go in and pay for a dozen guns, and within a year, you can have picked all of them up. Most of the customers are blue-collar in Chuck's Gun Shop, and most of his business is in handgun sales. Why? Because handguns are used for self-protection outside of the home generally. Right? Shotguns are for home defense. Handguns are for when you're out and about and you got to conceal it. Rifles are for doing battle if you know one's coming. Right? That's just kind of my simple mantra of this deal. Riggio, Chuck Riggio, says he doubts that there's any relationship between guns and gun violence. I would think there's no relationship at all. Ever seen a gun shot by itself? I haven't. So what he's saying is it's not the guns that are causing any sort of terror out there on the streets of Chicago. It's the hands of the people that they're potentially in that's wreaking havoc. A baseball bat can't randomly get up and smash you in the head on its own. It's got to be in the hands of someone that feels like smashing you in the head with a baseball bat. He also declined to provide shop sales figures and demurred when he asked whether Chicago's handgun ban has any effects on his business. He just didn't want to comment, which is probably a pretty good business thing to do. I don't know if it has an effect one way or another. I just follow the law. So let's talk about the law. Chicago passed its handgun law nearly 27 years ago. As a matter of fact, tomorrow it'll be 27 years ago. April 9th, 1982 will be the anniversary. In the wake of a 2008 Supreme Court decision, D.C. versus Heller, it's legally being challenged. What happened was the NRA and the Illinois State Firearms Association, they filed a lawsuit against the city of Chicago regarding their handgun ban. However, a very liberal, just goofball judge, circuit court judge, dismissed the suit. So what is it doing now? It's headed in front of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Jennifer Hoyle is the director of public affairs for the city's law department. She said until the courts say otherwise, the handgun ban will remain in effect. So here's the deal. The Supreme Court lays a decision. If you read the decision, it's quite apparent that your city is in violation. Yet they're not going to do anything about it until another court, which is actually a lower court, says you got to do something about it. Can you imagine the audacity? There's a balance of power, legislative, executive, judicial. Legislative passes the laws. Executive enforces the laws. Judicial interprets the laws. Listen to this. This is a report about how criminals feel about you having guns. Listen to this.
The Centers for Disease Control recently completed a review of studies of various types of gun control, waiting periods, registration and licensing, and bans on certain firearms. It could not document that these rules have reduced violent crime. How can this be? Signing the Brady Bill into law didn't help?
Don't tell me this bill will not make a difference. That is not true.
Sorry, the government can't say it has made a difference. One reason is that the bad guys tend to ignore gun laws.
When I had a gun, I didn't care what laws they had. I'm not worrying about the government saying that I can't carry a gun. I'm going to carry a gun anyway.
These maximum security felons in New Jersey scoff at measures like the Brady Law.
I'm not going in the store to buy no gun, so I could care less if they had a background check or not.
I bought it from the street, from a source. There's guns everywhere. If you got money, you can get a gun.
A study funded by the Department of Justice confirmed what these prisoners said. Most criminals buy their guns illegally and easily. And get this, the study said the felons say the thing they fear most is not the police, not time in prison, but you, another American who might be armed.
When you're going to rob somebody you don't know, it makes it harder because you don't know what to expect out of them.
It's a reason many states are passing gun uncontrol. They're allowing citizens to carry guns with them. It's called concealed carry or right to carry. And it comforts women like Laura Jones.
It's a safety thing. I feel better knowing I have a way to protect myself.
Straight out of the mouths of the criminals, guys. Straight out of the mouths of the criminals. They fear you when you have guns. Who else does? That's right. Your government. How about that? Okay. Springfield, Illinois, is abuzz with gun talk. Gun control advocates traveled to Springfield about a month ago. March 11th was Illinois Gun Owners Lobby Day, and several bills were under consideration. Listen to this. One mandates background checks in private gun sales, which currently don't require them. Now, that's a violation of the Constitution right there. Freedom to do with your property as you so choose. Another prohibits sales of multiple handguns to one person within a 30-day period, which is the law in Riverdale, Illinois. A third bans assault weapons. Ooh. Chicago-based Joyce Foundation, which lists gun violence as one of its six priority issues, chooses not to take sides in the debate over guns. They said, what we're in favor of is a reduction in gun violence. Can you imagine? That's like saying what we're in favor of is trying to reduce speeding. So what we're going to do is we're going to start limiting cars. They can go just so fast, and if it comes down to it, we're just going to start taking cars away from people. We're going to say that you can only own one car, and you can't replace it except once every 6 years. Stupid. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth. Attention.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, I've got some information I want to send your way, which is directly from Fox News. They did a great job in this. We're going to talk about, of course, the Mexico gun issue. Now, here's the deal. You've heard before about the shocking facts, quote-unquote, on TV and radio and in newspapers, on the internet, everywhere, that 90% of the guns taken off of Mexican drug cartels originated in the U.S. Here's the deal. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said to reporters on a flight to Mexico, she said it was 90%. So did Bob Schieffer while interviewing President Obama. So did Dianne Feinstein. She said, actually said, it is unacceptable to have 90% of the guns that are picked up in Mexico and used to shoot judges, police, and mayors come from the United States. You're right, it is. It just doesn't actually happen that way. There's just one problem with the 90% statistic, folks. It's just not true. In fact, guys, it's not even close. Let me give you a few numbers. In 2007 to 2008, according to ATF, Mexico submitted 11,000 guns to the ATF for tracing. Close to 6,000 were successfully traced. And of those, 90%, which is 5,114 to be exact, according to testimony by this ATF special agent, they were found to have come from the U.S. So 90% of 6,000 guns, 11,000 were submitted, 6,000 were traced, and 90% of those that were actually successfully traced came from the U.S. So in other words, 68% of the guns that were recovered were never submitted for tracing because 29,000 were recovered at crime scenes. So they collect 29,000 guns. They take only 11,000 and give them to ATF. ATF is only able to figure out how to trace 6,000 of those. And of those, 5,000, 5,100 of them, were found to have come from the U.S. All right? So again, these numbers. 68% of the guns that were recovered were never submitted for tracing. And when you weed out the roughly 6,000 guns that could not be traced, the remaining 32%, that means that 83% of the guns found at crime scenes could not be traced to the U.S. Only 17% were. And a vast majority of those were fully automatic weapons. They were not purchased from gun shops and smuggled across the border. The black market in Mexico is a virtual arms bazaar. You can get frag grenades from South Korea. You can get Chinese-made AK-47s, Spanish shoulder-fired rocket launchers, Israeli and former Soviet bloc manufactured guns. Imagine that. Just simply imagine that. So this 90% is total BS. 17% is all they can confirm. Now, why didn't they give all 29,000 guns to ATF? The reason? Because they were obviously not from the United States. So why bother giving them to ATF? So ATF could say, yeah, okay, well, 17%. Unreal. Russian crime organizations are actively trafficking drugs and arms into Mexico. South America, during the late 1990s, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia established a clandestine arms smuggling and drug trafficking partnership with the Tijuana, Mexico cartel. From Asia, according to the 2006 Amnesty International report, China has provided arms to countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Chinese assault weapons and Korean explosives have been recovered in Mexico. In Mexico itself, more than 150,000 soldiers have deserted in the last 6 years, according to Mexican Congressman Robert Badillo. Sure it's not Roberto, according to this report? Many took their weapons with them, including their standard-issue M16s, fully automatic select-fire guns. Imagine that. You're a deserter. Are you going to leave all your gear, grab up your luau shirt, your shorts, and your flip-flops, and just sneak out in the middle of the night? No, you're going to grab all your junk. The reason you're going to grab all your junk is you got a job waiting for you with the drug cartel. You're taking your guns. If you can sneak some ammo out with a couple bottles of tequila to your buddy in supply, you're going to do that too. Guatemala. U.S. intelligence agencies say traffickers move immigrants, stolen cars, guns, and drugs, including most of the American cocaine, along the prosperous Mexican-Guatemala border. On March 27th, La Hora, a Guatemalan newspaper, reported that police seized 500 grenades and a load of AK-47 full-auto guns on the border. Police say the cache was transported by a Mexican drug cartel operating out of Ixcan, a border town. Wow. Does this start to make this picture a little more clearly? I got to thank Fox News for coming up with these numbers, doing their research. Ed Head is the name of the guy who is the operations manager at Gunsight in Arizona. Wonderful place. I've conversed with Ed. Great guy. He spent 24 years with the U.S. Border Patrol. He recently displayed an array of weapons considered to be assault rifles that are similar to those recovered in Mexico, but are unavailable for sale in the U.S. because why? The ones in Mexico are full auto. We can't just go down and buy those. This is what Ed said. These kinds of guns, the auto versions of these guns, are not coming from El Paso. They're coming from other sources. They are brought in from Guatemala. They are brought in from places like China. They're being diverted from the military. But you don't get to see these guns. I'm sorry, but you don't get these guns from the U.S. With one exception. The ones coming from the Army that are being, that the deserters are taking come from the U.S. But that's a U.S. government sponsoring that sale. Some guns, he said, are legitimately shipped to the government of Mexico by Colt, for example, like for their M16s, in the United States. They are approved by the U.S. government for use by the Mexican military service. These guns end up in Mexico that way, the full auto versions. They are not smuggled across the river. Then what happens? Well, corruption takes hold, and these guns are sold off. A lot of the guns that have allegedly been found in Mexico from these drug cartels are Belgian-made M16s by FN. Fabrique Nationale, Belgian-made gun. I shot a Belgian-made FN M16, and the U.S. government has a few of them in their arsenal. I had it when I was a DOD trainer contracted with the Army. So the Army had some of these. So the U.S. sends guns there. They sell guns to Mexico. Belgium sends guns there with their M16s. And these are the exact same guns handing up in the hands of the Mexican drug cartels. Oh, my goodness, say it isn't so. Why, Hillary, did you not be honest with us on all of these numbers? Did you have an agenda, ma'am? Did you have an agenda, Mrs. Feinstein? You know, I got an email that was funny. It says, you think you're having a bad day. Imagine, somewhere out there, there's actually a Mr. Pelosi. I found that to be funny. All right. The Mexican government says it has seized 2,239 grenades in the last 2 years. But those grenades and the rocket-propelled grenades are unavailable in U.S. gun shops. The ones used in an attack on a U.S. consulate in Monterrey in October and a TV station in January were made in South Korea. Almost 70 similar grenades were seized in February in the bottom of a truck entering Mexico from Guatemala. Coming up from the southern borders, I've been saying this for weeks. Most of these weapons are being smuggled from Central American countries or by sea, eluding U.S. and Mexican monitors who are focused on the smuggling of semi-automatic and conventional weapons purchased from dealers in the U.S. border states of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, according to a report in the L.A. Times, who is none too gun-friendly, but at least they were honest on this one. So why would the Mexican drug cartels, which last year grossed between $17 and $38 billion, it's kind of tough, they don't actually report the numbers, bother buying single-shot rifles and force thousands of unknown straw buyers in the U.S. through a government background check when they can buy boatloads of fully automatic M16s and other rifles from China, Israel, or South Africa? A security consultant in Mexico who advises the Mexican government says the drug cartels are using the Guatemalan border to move black market weapons. Some are left over from the Central American wars that the United States helped fight back in the 80s and 90s. Others, like the grenades and rocket launchers, are South Korean, Israeli, and Spanish. Some were legally supplied to the Mexican government. Others were sold by corrupt military officers or officials, as we've been saying. Imagine that. Being vindicated feels so good. The exaggeration of the United States' responsibility, quote-unquote, for the lawlessness in Mexico extends even beyond the 90% falsehood, and some Second Amendment advocates believe it's designed to promote more restrictive gun control laws in the U.S. Imagine that. They're lying. The officials that get on there and blab their suckholes are lying to you and I and the rest of America about the number of guns from America into Mexico. In a remarkable claim, a Mexican ambassador to the U.S. said Mexico seizes 2,000 guns a day from the United States, which would equal 730,000 a year. That's a far cry from the official statistic from the Mexican Attorney General's office. It says Mexico seized 29,000 weapons in all of 2007 and 2008. So now we're talking 14,500 a year. Now that's total guns. That's not from the U.S. That's total guns. When this other butt wipe, Arturo Sacarujan, the Mexican ambassador to the U.S., said 2,000 guns a day. Imagine all of these lies. Can you believe this? This guy ought to be booted out of this country. Just boot Mexican ambassador to the U.S. Goodbye. Chris Cox, spokesman for the National Rifle Association, blames the media and anti-gun politicians in the U.S. for misrepresenting the Mexican weapons and where they come from. Quote, reporters after politician after news anchor just disregard the truth on this, Cox said. The numbers are intentionally used to weaken the Second Amendment. The predominant source of guns in Mexico is Central and South America. You also have Russian, Chinese, and Israeli guns. It is estimated that over 100,000 soldiers diverted from the army to work for drug cartels, and that ignores all the police who did the same. How many of them took their weapons with them? Well, probably all of them. And of course, he's estimating over 150,000, where Mexico actually confirmed it was time and a half that, 150,000. But Tom Diaz, senior policy analyst for the Violence Policy Center, way anti-gun group, called the 90% issue a red herring and said that it should not distract from the efforts to stop trafficking guns into Mexico. He said this, "Let's do what we can with what we know," he said. "We know that one hell of a lot of firearms come from the United States because our gun market is wide open." Can you believe this? What an idiotic statement. He says that we know this because this, which is bull. "We know that one hell of a lot of firearms come from the United States because the gun market is wide open." So because it's easy for you and I to go out and buy a gun in the majority of this country and within our areas where we live, our states, because of that, then we must be sending this stuff south to Mexico. Okay, I got to ask you, what about all the drug violence with all the Canadian drug cartels? Have you been listening to these stories? Huge violence up and down the border of the U.S.-Canadian border of all these drug cartels. Now, there's pretty restrictive gun laws in Canada, but they're not talking about all the guns in the United States that are being bought by straw purchasers and shipped north of the border to arm all these drug cartels. You know why you haven't heard that story? Because it doesn't exist. I just gave you a bunch of BS rhetoric. There is no problem on the Canadian border. So if we were so inclined to buy guns as American citizens and send them to Mexican drug cartels, why the hell aren't we buying guns and selling them to the people in Canada? It doesn't make any sense, does it? They're lying. Every one of these scumbags that are lying to you and I, out of the government spokesmouths, every single one of them should be relieved of their position and never allowed to hold position in public office again, be it about this or anything else. If they lie to us about strategic oil preserves or the National Oil Reserve or about the financial meltdown in this country, if they outright lie to us, just bold-faced lie, or fail to give us accurate percentages and accountabilities, they should be booted. As a matter of fact, they should be brought up on some sort of criminal charge. I you know what I'm going to do this morning? I'm going to give this a task to you, my audience. Here's your task. You do a little bit of research and see if you can find a law that we could charge these public officials with for lying to us, the public, when the actual information that they're talking about is available. And if they choose to disregard that authenticated information and lie to us, what could we charge them with? A criminal charge. And I'll tell you why in a second. If you folks, my fine listeners, can do a little bit of that research and email me, bill@2aradio.com. Just short, concise, or a link. I'll look them up. And I will put all that together in our own little dedicated radio show for that. If you do that for me, bill@2aradio.com, let me know. Because here's the beauty. We have the power of citizen's arrest. Did you know that? As a matter of fact, the police only have a couple of powers more so than what we do. One of those is serving a search warrant. You can't serve a search warrant as a private citizen. There's that. There's one other little thing. I forget what it is. If Dave Champion were here right now, he could tell me. We talked about this just about a month ago. So, by the way, tune into Dave's show at 3 o'clock Central Time. It's a great show. Right here on RBN. So if we can actually go out and perform a citizen's arrest on, say, Hillary Clinton for this 90% thing, when we can show her these facts, actually put them all together, arrest her and file a criminal complaint, would that not be taking this country back in its own way? Dianne Feinstein for doing the same thing? Chuck Schumer, if he decides to kick in on this deal? How about Eric Holder, the Attorney General, the actual chief law enforcement guy of the U.S., sitting in a jail cell? Because we did a citizen's arrest because he purposely misled the United States people. Can you imagine that? How great would that be? I'm leaving it upon you, my great audience, because I got to tell you, I've gotten some great emails with some great stuff out there. So I'll leave it up to you guys. Send that to me. We'll do a show just on that and some of the possibilities we could have. We're going to talk a little bit about Australia that has a massive gun ban and what's been happening there when we return.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
In 1997, Australia passed wide-sweeping, you have to turn in your guns, gun control. As in, they took hundreds of thousands of guns, many of them regular old guns, many of them collectors that had been in the family, many of them one, two, three, four of a kind, right? And they chopped them up. They chopped up the actions with torches and with chop saws. So they disarmed Australia for the most part. Since then, there is a document that documented four mass murders since Australia enacted their gun ban. Now, how can you say there's a mass murder? There's no guns, right? Here's how the mass murders worked. One was with a knife and carbon monoxide gas. That involved four victims. Five victims were killed by carbon monoxide gas. Now, keep in mind, mass murder is considered four people or more, or whoever came up with that. That's generally considered a mass murder, four or more victims. In another incident, 15 victims were killed by an arsonist. So there seems to be a very elastic definition among gun control advocates as to what compromises a massacre. Gun Control Australia notes 32, quote, gun massacres where 141 people were killed. That's an average to between four and five victims per incident. But curiously, after a country enacts massive gun confiscation in Australia, mass homicide incidents with between 4 and 15 victims suddenly do not qualify as, quote, massacres. Right? The Australian Prime Minister recently accused arsonists of mass murder, as this huge set of brush fires that they had going on that were purposely set killed 135 people. He called them mass murders, which is what they are. They didn't use a gun, so you wouldn't normally think mass murder. There's a book out there. I encourage everyone to pick up a copy called The Bias Against Guns by John Lott. The Bias Against Guns by John Lott, L-O-T-T. In Chapter 2, it is entitled 400 Years of Gun Control, Why Isn't It Working? And it deconstructs the gun control agenda and motivates more people to support our civil rights of self-defense. In his book, John Lott examines the relationship between gun availability and multiple murders. He concludes, if the right to carry laws allow citizens to limit the amount of attacks that still take place, the number of persons harmed should fall relative to the number of shootings. You follow that? And indeed, this is exactly what statistics find. The average number of people dying or becoming injured per attack declines by around 50%. So if you have a country that says you cannot have guns, but a criminal has a gun, he might get away with killing 10 people. If the citizens had guns and they were allowed to carry, like, say, here in Nevada or Alaska or Arizona, the number of victims in that sort of mass shooting declines by half. They'd only get five. Now, one sucks, but I got to tell you, five is a whole lot better than 10. You got to have an armed citizenry for that. Folks, I'd like to read to you a little bit by Thomas Paine, who said, "It's the duty of the patriot to protect his country from its government." One thing that Dave Champion uses to close his show every day, and I got to tell you, Thomas Paine had it right. Thank you very much for tuning in today. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Send me those emails.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.